This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by one of the most person who does some of the most interesting studies with physicians, on physicians, about cognitive impairment of physicians. Fascinating work. We're with Dr. Kirk Daffner. Dr. Daffner is the chief of the Division of Cognitive and Behavioral Neurology, director at the Center for Brain and Mind Medicine at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Massachusetts. Dr. Daffner, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Scott, thank you for having me today. As you mentioned, I'm at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. I'm a cognitive neurologist. I'm also the Wimberly Professor of Neurology at Harvard Medical School. And I spend a lot of time assessing patients who have a variety of cognitive disorders and dementia, and do research on related topics.
So fascinating. And I understand that one of the areas that you look at and work on is looking at, as physicians age and more physicians practice into their later years, is trying to sort of handle, how do you deal with physicians that, you know, trying to figure out whether they're cognitively impaired themselves, or they can continue to practice at the level they should practice at, what's safe, not what's not safe, and so on and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about that field of work and some of the things that you see.
Sure, happy to do so. First, just in terms of the scope of the issue, physician workforce is getting older. That, you know, the number of physicians 65 and over quadrupled between the mid-70s and today. There are now close to 250,000 physicians 65 and older who are in the workforce. That's about 25% of us. And 40% of them still see patients. So that's about 95,000 doctors. So there are a lot of great things about an aging workforce, in the sense that older physicians have a lot of accumulated knowledge and experience. They have clinical wisdom, and they're a way to deal with doctor shortages. But the issue that we have focused on is that age is the biggest risk factor for cognitive impairment and dementia. And a reasonable and important number of physicians who are practicing are likely to be impaired. And my colleagues and I are trying to sort out what options institutions and individuals have to deal with these risks. The article, sorry, go on.
No, take a moment on that, because you touch on a number of different interesting issues. One, almost a quarter of all physicians are 65 or older. Two, we're facing horrible shortages of physicians. So we want people in the workforce as long as they can be, as long as they're capable of being so. And three, probably as much as anything, these are incredibly sensitive issues with the physicians. Can you take a moment on that sensitivity to this? Because some physicians recognize they've got cognitive impairment and need to figure out what they can and can't do.
Yes.
Many of them, I assume, don't agree that they have cognitive impairment, or other people notice it before they want to admit it. They might notice they slow down remembering names and some other things, which many of us do as we age.
Sure.
But we're not sure exactly what that line is of cognitive impairment. And how difficult a situation is this for a leader of a health system to talk to the physician about?
I think it's very challenging for all of us, because physicians very much highly value their cognitive abilities, and it is an extraordinarily painful and challenging topic to consider the erosion of these capacities. People who actually have brain-based cognitive problems often lack insight into them, so they certainly may not be aware of it, and others may be loath to report them because of the systems that we're in. I think that there are a number of approaches that institutions can take, and I think that if institutions, hospitals, medical systems are thoughtful and sensitive and apply these systems across the board, it is possible to be both fair to physicians, as well as being sensitive to the risks that patients face if they're cared for by physicians who are unable to do so in a safe, competent manner.
And talk about what is the program for addressing this? How do you go about addressing this?
Sure. So recently, my colleagues and I, Drs. Devi Gittleman and Press, wrote an article in one of the American Academy of Neurology journals that specifically addressed what choices institutions face. And we highlighted basically 9 strategies, of which we chose one that we thought was most appropriate. And in brief, the choices include a reactive approach, which is what we currently do, depending on the reporting by peers, depending on physician self-assessment and self-report. There are institutional kinds of programs like board recertification and maintenance of certification programs. There is the credentialing process and peer recommendations. There's a possibility of age-mandated cognitive assessments or extensive kinds of evaluations and direct observation. There is mandatory retirement age. And the one that we highlighted as being the most favorable among ones that have challenges would be an age-based cognitive screening evaluation for physicians who reach a certain age to ensure that we identify people who are at highest risk for practicing medicine below the standard that we would be comfortable. Again,
let me ask you a question though. What is the age at which there should be mandatory screening? What is the age at which mandatory retirement? Do you have directions on those ages?
The risk of cognitive impairment it goes up with every year that we live. And we do not recommend a mandatory retirement age, because the other fact is that as we all get older, the variability in cognitive capacity and performance actually gets wider and wider. So there are definitely individuals who are well over the age of 65 who are performing as well as their 40 or 45-year-old counterparts. And it would be profoundly unfair to them to deny them their right to practice medicine, and it would deprive systems of really very competent, wise physicians and clinicians. So that is an option, and actually, as you know, it's something that we see with pilots over the age of now 65 and many state but not federal judges. I think in terms of when to consider these kinds of assessments, it's arbitrary. I think that over the age of 65, the risk of developing impairment and dementia goes up. And so one could certainly argue to begin a program of screening at 65 and follow people, depending on how they do, over time repeatedly, having the advantage of knowing how they did in previous tests to compare, to also serve as a guidepost to how they're doing now. I can tell you that there have been a number of institutions, medical systems around the country, that have begun to do these kinds of screens, and most have chosen age 70, which may be a little bit more palatable to individuals than age 65, but we're talking somewhere in that vicinity, 65, 70.
And are there things that people can do to slow down their cognitive impairment? Are there things they could do, or is this just so genetically wired that there's little one could do to impact this?
Genetics certainly plays an important role in all sorts of health and illness, and age is a major factor in terms of wear and tear and the risk of developing a whole host of things that can affect brain function. However, there is absolutely things that people can do, ideally starting in middle age and earlier. This is actually another area of of considerable interest to me and my colleagues and who have done research on this. But it's been estimated based on large-scale epidemiological studies that upwards of a third of the risk for developing dementia is due to modifiable factors. So there's evidence to support the value of physical activity, cognitively stimulating activities, social engagement, eating heart-healthy diets, managing cardiovascular risk factors, especially hypertension, maintaining adequate sleep, making sure we manage hearing and visual and other sensory losses, being mindful of the effects of over-the-counter and prescribed medications and their side effects, limiting alcohol, and protecting our brains from being banged up or damaged either by drugs or traumatic brain injury. So we are not helpless. We have limited control, of course, in life, but there are definitely things that we can do are very likely to substantially reduce our risk, but as physicians or as people, of experiencing cognitive deterioration and dementia.
Let me ask you a question.
Please.
My son over the last couple of years absolutely destroys me in chess. Should I view this as a sign of early dementia or cognitive impairment, or should I view it as just he's getting better and I'm getting worse?
Well, it sounds unlikely that this is a marker of dementia. Congratulations to your son. There's probably some ambivalence about beating his father. There are certain relatively predictable changes that are associated with what we would call normal cognitive aging. Things like there's slowing of the speed of processing, there is slowing of retrieval of information that's well stored, there are there's some deterioration in what's called executive functions, the ability to hold information online and shift sets and inhibit certain kinds of responses. There are visual changes and changes in dexterity and the like. But all of these things, and what you're probably saying is that your son is able to hold more potential moves in his head at one time and manipulate them faster than you can, and faster than probably you could do a decade or two ago. But normal age-related changes, although annoying for many of us, do not prevent us from having productive, active, and very meaningful lives. So no, I don't think that this is a sign of dementia.
But let me ask you a question. He doesn't feel ambivalent at all about beating me. He seems quite happy about it. Is there something wrong with his empathy skills?
Ah, good question. I don't know your son. I would say that it is both a joy to be able to beat our parents from time to time, but also there's some mixed feelings. I can tell you my brother played tennis against my mother for years and finally beat her when she was probably a ripe old age of 13. He was so excited. He jumped, ran and jumped over the net like he saw done on television, tripped and broke his ribs. So we have to be careful about hubris.
Exactly. It's fantastic.
That's why chess is a lot safer than tennis, I guess.
It's more likely I'll throw a chess piece at him than have him jump over the chessboard. But no, he's beating me consistently now for a few years since he was in 16. He's almost 20, and now I can't even play with him anymore because it's not fun because I just always lose.
But you,
it is what it is.
To have wisdom based on your years of experience and ability to see patterns in ways that he is. You can only dream of, at least for now.
My wisdom is choosing not to play against him too often. It's not good for my ego.
You're smart.
Dr. Daffner, another question. What are you most excited about and most focused on this year? I mean, you've got this brilliant, brilliant career, Harvard Medical School, Brigham and Women's Health, magnificent career, leader of one of the most fascinating areas that, you know, all of us as we age are more and more focused on, at least we should be, on our physical and mental health. It takes a lot more work as we get older to keep those things where they should be. You've got this fascinating career. What are you most excited about? What are your big priorities this year? Where are you most focused?
Well, I kind of preface this a few minutes ago. I am really keen on understanding what people can do that's within their power to reduce their risk of cognitive decline and dementia. I probably have become more interested in that over time, not only because I'm getting older, but because during my day job where I'm taking care of patients, I'm witnessing their struggles with a reduction in their cognitive capacity and their struggles with dementia. So I've been and continue to look at the differences between what might be considered successful cognitive aging and normal cognitive aging. Most recently, colleagues of mine and I have been trying to design potential interventions that can encourage or support individuals to make lifestyle changes and adopt behaviors that are healthy to their brain, and often they're also healthy to their for their hearts. So at this point, we as a medical community have a growing consensus about what our patients, including us, should do to remain healthy, but we have been really very poor at finding ways to actually get patients to do things that are in their interest and will support their well-being and health as they grow older. So that has become a growing interest of mine, and it is animating a lot of what I do in terms of work outside of patient care.
But you're, I mean, just truly magnificent work. And you mentioned earlier that I thought was so interesting about how we're physicians who have used their brains for their own success, for their esteem right. comes from them being physicians. Their brain is so important to their success, to their esteem, their position in the community, everything. I mean, some of which were great athletes, many of which were not, but their brain is what they stood out for.
Right.
And so seeing the brain decline is could be very hard emotionally, can't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I although the piece that we wrote in the neurology clinical practice had to do with what institutional choices there are to deal with this issue, I've also written about and really have thought a lot about what we as individuals can do in terms of personal choices. I had an article in the Washington Post a couple of years ago and offered up the value of developing what I called an occupational living will, which is basically developing advanced directives for one's professional life. And the idea behind that is to be very mindful when we have cognitive capacity still, what changes in our abilities would elicit a response in us to either investigate further whether we still are able to practice safely, or would be intolerable to us from our when we are most able and thinking about it, that we would really want to either retire or change the nature of our practice so that we continue to be active and engaged in a way that is as safe as possible. So I think it's really important and not pleasant. However,
it's a fascinating discussion, and economics play into it as well, because you get
absolutely.
Plenty of people that have not that enjoy making a living, enjoy making money, or haven't saved that much for a million different reasons.
Absolutely,
that they will live with a little bit of cognitive impairment, thinking they're doing fine because they're very intent on continuing to be able to support their family and provide or help their kids or whatever it might be. So you get a whole bunch of mixed motives that go into this as well. Whether wealthy or not wealthy, because everybody prefers to make money versus not, generally, and to be able to support themselves and others.
I think that one could envision a system that provides some ongoing support for these transitions so that the pain of reduction of income is less severe, and that encourages people at least to take seriously their own perhaps growing limitations, and do so in a way that is as responsible as possible. So I think that we, as a community, can sort of set up guardrails and structures that really encourage people or increase the likelihood that they do the right thing by making some of the consequences of the decisions less burdensome, at least financially.
No, 100%. And we all know, we're all students of this. The thing about being in consumers of healthcare, being people,
yes,
is we all know that our bodies and minds slow at different degrees, different stages. Like, I'm in my mid-50s. I know that I can't do as a young lawyer what I did as a young lawyer in terms of the speed and, you know, ability to concentrate and focus like I did in my 30s and energy. Just, we all see it. And it's a fascinating observation. And it's a matter of when that observation becomes so clear that you have to make changes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that as we get older, we can become wiser in terms of adaptations. There's a notion in aging research that the advantage of selective optimization and compensation, so that as we get older, we're wise to select more carefully, to choose the most important goals and activities, to really optimize what we're doing, to focus on what might be thought of as our five easy pieces, and to compensate, to really activate or develop new strategies that allow us to continue to do really high quality work, but perhaps in a way that's different than we did when we were younger. And I think this can sustain us. And again, it's a matter of being really mindful about this and accepting or being aware of some of our growing limitations and adopting workarounds for as long as it's feasible and we feel comfortable doing them. This is useful not only for physicians, but for all of us getting older.
Yeah, no, I think just brilliant advice, quite frankly, Dr. Gaffner. You know, I had a chance to visit with Dr. Mike Roizen early this year, who's the author of the set of books called Real Age and Aging, and, you know, how you assess what age really are and so forth.
Yes.
And I assume you're quite familiar, because you really talk about overlapping concepts and trends, and just brilliant. And two of the most interesting people I've had a chance to talk to this year are yourself and him. And just fascinating, the field of study that you work in,
you know,
both in the cognitive impairment of physicians, but just generally the cognitive issues and aging and behaviors and so forth. Dr. Gaffner, I want to thank you for joining us today. Just brilliant.
Thank you so much for joining your time and your kindness. And good luck with the chess game if you decide to continue to play with your son, which is probably
good
for
your brain, by the way.
Well,
I'll continue to play. I was a wrestler. I did other things, and now he beats me in all these things. And it's increasingly challenging, but it just is what it is. It's part of aging, and life goes on. It is what it is.
I completely agree with you. I hope you have a wonderful
day. But it's fun to watch him grow up and do as well as he's doing, him and my daughter. So it is what it is. Just you sort of take the good with the bad.
Absolutely.
Dr. Daffner, fantastic. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome. Be well.